This podcast is brought to you by Perfect Smiles in Nashua, New Hampshire. Do what I did and update your smile. Call 844-A-PERFECT-SMILE. When you change your smile, you change your life.
Better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Carr Show.
A stunning new accusation from President Trump's niece, Mary Trump, telling MSNBC's Rachel Maddow she's heard the president use anti-Semitic slurs and the N-word.
Have you heard the president use the N-word? Yeah. And anti-Semitic slurs specifically? Yes.
Now, who can argue with that?
We did ask the White House tonight for a response to Mary Trump's claims. They said, quote, "This is a book of falsehoods, plain and simple. The president doesn't use those words." That claim isn't actually from her book. It's just something she said in this interview.
Yo got a gift, my friend. Yo got a gift.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
Last thing you need is an up-armored Humvee coming into a neighborhood. It's like the military invading. They become the enemy. They're supposed to be protecting these people.
President Trump getting an endorsement now from the National Association of Police Organizations. This group has ditched Joe Biden.
Who's your captain? Howie Carr.
Orange County Health Officer Dr. Raul Pino telling us one person reported to have died from COVID was killed in a motorcycle accident.
Motorcycle accident. But you can actually argue that it could have been the COVID-19 that caused him to crash.
All right, move on. Nothing to see here. Please disperse. Nothing to see here. Please.
Unchained and unstoppable.
Say hello, Bailey.
And we love Bailey.
Know, Bailey is definitely going to vote in November, and he's voting Democrat. All the way. Bailey for Biden.
I'll get you a rolled up newspaper on the snout is what I'll get you. Very bad dog.
Rump swabs, hacks, and moon bats beware. It's Howie Carr.
Last hour, I opened with the fact that I didn't think Elizabeth Warren was much of a dog person. And somebody texted in, "That's funny, Taylor. I never viewed her as a person. And that's even more true. Nor dogs nor people fit the likes of Elizabeth Warren. I'm Taylor Cormier. Grace and I have been filling in along with the help from Jared on the board and doing all the magic behind the scenes here at the Howie Carr Show today while Howie is off preparing for his daughter's wedding. I believe this is the first of his offspring that's getting married. So congratulations to Howie and the whole Carr clan. 844-500-4242. We have to at some point, Jared, in this next 20 minutes play that report that was in the intro of the Orange County health officer and what a dolt this guy is. And you can just gather from this, if this is the intelligentsia level that's running this pandemic and all the numbers behind it, these numbers are greatly exaggerated. We'll get into that, but I did want to get into a couple of other things first. And one, if you've been watching Fox News, we have it on the screens here, and you know we're probably going to change that soon. But if you've been on social media or watching Fox News at all, you've been seeing this clip they play over and over. Trump is being interviewed by Chris Wallace, and they're going to run that entire interview on Sunday. But in this clip, and you'll hear it for yourself, we've got it here. Trump contests that, actually Trump claims that Joe Biden has called for the defunding of police. Chris Wallace tries to run blocker for Joe Biden, and Trump gets pretty into it. It's funny. Cut 17, Jared.
Liberal Democrats have been running cities in this country for decades.
Poorly.
Why is it so bad right now?
They've run them poorly. It was always bad, but now it's gotten totally out of control. And it's really because they wanted to fund the police, and Biden wants to defund the police.
Sir, he does not.
Look, he signed a charter with Bernie Sanders.
It says nothing about defunding the police.
Oh, really? It says abolish. It says fund. Let's go.
All right.
Get me the charter, please.
All right.
Get me the charter, please. Let's go. Let's have this out right now. It may or may not be in the charter. Chris Wallace went on with Hemmer you know, they're promoting this interview. And Chris Wallace explained, well, he brought back the charter and really couldn't find the words in there. Found a lot of other things that he, you know, didn't agree with, but he couldn't find that. I'm telling you right now, he didn't have to go to this charter that he signed, this letter that a lot of people have signed. All he had to do was play this next cut, cut 18.
Surplus military equipment for law enforcement. They don't need that. The last thing you need is an up-armored Humvee coming into a neighborhood. It's like the military invading. They don't know anybody. They become the enemy. They're supposed to be protecting these people. So my generic point is
but
that...
do we agree that we can redirect some of the funding?
Yes, absolutely.
There it is right there. Defunding the police. Redirecting funding. Grace made a great point a few weeks ago, and it stuck with me, that when these liberals tried to take us down for something we've written on Twitter or Facebook or have said on the radio, we have to explain ourselves. And then they come back and say, words matter. Words matter. You shouldn't have to explain yourself if you're using the right phraseology. She said to me, it may have been on air, may have been off, that if you're using the term defund the police, that's what people are thinking when they hear those words. You are defunding the police, not reallocating or shifting funds or redirecting funds, as Joe Biden said he's for. We have this vision of money being siphoned out of the police department and into our zoos and into our, you know, whatever, community centers, things like that. Yes, Grace.
And I think it was Dana Perino who said the Democrats love to have these slogans that are so definitive. They love to have believe all women, defund the police.
Say their names.
There's not a lot of wiggle room. And then when you actually hold them to it and say, okay, well, this is what you want to do, they go,
Didn't really mean defund the police per se.
You are misunderstanding what we're saying. It's like, I'm just taking you for what you are saying.
Yeah. Your chant, whatever your incantation is, that's what you're putting off to people. Defund the police. All cops are bad, or other words that you'd like to throw in there. That is what we perceive to be their meaning. That you actually, when you say you want to defund the police, we believe that you want to defund the police. It's not that complicated. But what the liberals say is, no, we want to shift the funding, or as what Joe Biden said with the gentleman who speaks through a computer because he has ALS, he wants to redirect the funding. That's a clip that it doesn't have too much funny stuff in there, as far as you know other than the texting. We have no idea what that means. We imagine protecting could be detecting, but Biden said texting instead of protecting or detecting. I think where this turning point in this election is, if there ever needed to be a turning point, and we have it here because we have cuts from the National Association of Police Organizations president saying, we're giving up Biden because Trump has allowed us to take in military surplus. And, you know, he goes on to say, thank God, because the climate today is as such that we need this military grade armor and armored rescue vehicles, as he calls them, so that we can actually go out into the community without so much fear as getting injured or severely injured. We'll have Mick McHale say it for himself. Cut five.
I think what is going on today clearly indicates the position that our association is in. Upon taking office, one of the first acts or empowerment that President Trump signed into law was the ability to once again be able to purchase and receive the surplus of military equipment.
And he goes on to say that they use armored rescue vehicles. They have ballistic shields, ballistic helmets. And you've seen the riots and all of the protests, the violent protests that have been going on across the country. And we've seen things, we have seen police officers killed, injured. Just yesterday in New York City, or it may have been 2 days ago, but we saw the video yesterday, the chief of the department got his head practically bashed in by protesters on the Brooklyn Bridge. no wonder they need this kind of weaponry or militarization, as a lot of people like to call it. It's protection, just as Antifa. Nobody is saying Antifa is being militarized, at least from the left. Nobody on the left is saying that. They're saying they're going in prepared. They're ready. They have their protection because the police use pepper spray and the police use rubber bullets. Those are, by the way, non-lethal means of dispersion. But Antifa is doing its best to try to militarize itself. The police can certainly do the same in order to protect themselves. That's why the National Association of Police Organizations has endorsed for the first time in probably quite some time a Republican for president. And I hope to see a lot of these stronghold Democrat police unions do the exact same, because you heard in that cut, and you're going to keep hearing until the election is over, that cut of Joe Biden saying that the police are the enemy. They are supposed to be out there protecting the people, and instead they're riding around in up-armored Humvees. And then he says, we want to redirect funding from the police department. Have you ever heard a police department say, you know what, Mr. Mayor, we just have too much money this year? No, they're always underfunded. And you're going to redirect funds from their department? Crime stats have been, before Trump came into office, we're getting towards the worst point. Then it went down. And now, of course, we're seeing spikes because these Democrat mayors are taking it upon themselves to be the law and order in their cities. And they want to create their own little civilizations, their own little communes, as we saw in Seattle. CHOP, CHAZ, whatever you want to call it. That was an experiment that failed miserably. Murders, rapes, sexual assaults, no police. They completely defunded the police department in that little commune. And look what happened. It had to be torn down, ripped apart, because it wasn't working. Their utopia failed. 844-500-4242. We'll take some calls. I do want to play this this news report from Florida, because it's pretty damn funny. I'm Taylor Cormier, filling in for Howie Carr. This is The Howie Carr Show.
You're tuned into The Howie Carr Radio Network.
This is Mark in Williston, Vermont.
This is Marie in Somerville, Massachusetts.
This is Mike from South Attleboro, Mass. And this is The Howie Carr Show.
844-500-4242. This is The Howie Carr Show. Howie has been off today. Grace and I have been filling in with Jared on the board and producing so much of the show behind the scenes. It's now time for the poll question, which is brought to you by the all-new 2020 Subaru Outback, built to accompany you on your summertime travels. SubaruofNewEngland.com to learn more. Jared, what is the poll question, and what are the results thus far?
If an effective vaccine for coronavirus came out today, would you take it?
What are we talking, like 100% effective or the standard 40% effective?
Well, Dr. Fauci is comfortable with, what, 30% effective, so...
I don't know, but either way, no thank you. I'll pass.
63% of the audience say no thank you.
That's about where I'd put it. You know, if you're over 50 and you have an underlying health condition, yeah, it might be a good idea to get a vaccine. That's up to you. But I'm young. I don't think I really have any serious underlying health conditions that I've been made aware of. So I'm going to take my chances with the numbers that are out there right now with people under 30 dying from the virus. And I'm just going to, yeah, for now, I'm okay. But thank you very much. All right. I do want to play. This is so damn funny. I got a kick out of this when I was watching it earlier. This is a report out of Florida, a local station in Florida. And they had some questions about the local COVID death numbers. They saw there were two people under the age of 20 that had died. And they found that curious, because it's not too many people under the age of 20 die from this virus. So they wanted to learn more. And they went up to their local health department and they asked. This is, I didn't cut this up because it's too funny to not keep intact. This is cut 13.
Good evening. I'm Luann Sorrell. We start with big breaking news tonight. Fox 35 questioning the coronavirus numbers and uncovering a shocking revelation. A man dies in a motorcycle crash, but his death listed as a coronavirus death.
Fox 35 News investigating. We dug through the data, and then we asked the questions. Fox 35's Danielle Lama joins us live from Orange County tonight. Danielle, how are officials explaining this?
I love corny newscasts like this.
Well, Charles, they really haven't given us much of an explanation at this point. The way we found out is I was asking the county health officer about two coronavirus deaths involving people in their 20s and whether they had any underlying conditions. Then one of his answers surprised us.
The first one didn't have any. He died in a motorcycle accident.
New questions tonight about the accuracy of the state's coronavirus death numbers. Orange County Health Officer Dr. Raul Pino telling us one person reported to have died from COVID was killed in a motorcycle accident. So was it removed from the data?
I don't think so. I have to double check. We were arguing. We were discussing and trying to argue with the state. Not because of the numbers. I mean, it's 100. It's not make any difference if it's 99.
Yeah.
But the validity
hold it right there, Jared. So he said it doesn't, you know, really doesn't affect the numbers all that much, whether it's 199 if we take away this one guy who didn't have a legitimate COVID death. But what about the rest of the 99? How many more of those are just like this guy? Go ahead.
The fact that the individual didn't die from COVID-19, dying in a crash. But you can actually argue that it could have been the COVID-19 that caused him to crash. So I don't know.
All right, that's all we needed to hear. This county health commissioner argues that we cannot prove that the motorcycle accident was not a direct result of him being diagnosed with the coronavirus, with COVID-19.
In Seinfeld, when Kramer doesn't make the stairs and the levels in his apartment and loses the bet, and he says, "I could have made them," and Jerry says, "Anything can be done."
It's whether you will do it, and that's the bet.
That's how I feel right now. It's like, well, yeah, he could have. Technically, anything's possible.
But that just, and if it's all going down like this, where they're saying, they're just checking two boxes. One, box number one is, did this person test positive for the coronavirus? If yes, check box. Check. Box number two, is this person now deceased? If yes, please check box. Check. And there you have a COVID death. That's how it is. I just thought everybody would get a kick out of that. And it's really horrifying when you get right down to it. It'd be really terrifying if it weren't so absurd. I am going to tell you what we have in store for you the next half hour. Again, it is the 51st anniversary of the incident at Chappaquiddick that took the life of Mary Jo Kopechne at the hands of Ted Kennedy driving off the Chappaquiddick Bridge. Last year, we did a podcast. It's about 20 minutes long on the 50th anniversary of Chappaquiddick. It's narrated by myself. Grace makes a cameo in it, written by Howie Carr. We're going to play it in its entirety for you right after the break. So stick around. You don't want to miss it. It's going to be a lot of fun. And if you haven't heard it before, it's going to be a real treat for you. If you've heard it before, it's going to be great to hear it again and refresh your memory on what happened on this weekend 51 years ago. We're going to get right into it, no intro or nothing, as soon as we come out of the 6:30 break. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Howie Carr Show. Chappaquiddick, the podcast, up next.
Have you had enough yet of the volatility of the stock markets? Down 1,000 or more points one day, up the next. Are you tired of watching that little box at the bottom of your TV screen that shows the market plunging hundreds of points? You need to get diversified with Orion Metal Exchange. You shouldn't be caught flat-footed in this roller coaster ride the stock markets have been on. No matter what the reason, the coronavirus or before that, the oil price war abroad, you always need to be diversified. And that means owning some precious metals, gold and silver. Listen up. Orion Metal Exchange is the only precious metals company that I trust. If you still haven't taken advantage of their no obligation guide, it's not too late. Give them a call today to learn more about gold and silver. Call Orion today at 1-800-912-2300. That's 1-800-912-2300. Call them now. 1-800-912-2300.
live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
My fellow citizens, I have requested this opportunity to talk to the people of Massachusetts about the tragedy which happened last Friday evening.
Mary Jo Kopechne had been dead less than a week. Now Senator Ted Kennedy was live on television, delivering his long-anticipated explanation, both to his constituents in Massachusetts and to a larger national network audience. Earlier in the day, he had returned to his family's compound in Hyannisport after spending the morning at the courthouse in Edgartown on Martha's Vineyard.
This morning I entered a plea of guilty to the charge of leaving the scene of an accident.
He could have been charged with any number of more serious offenses: vehicular homicide, driving under the influence, reckless driving, driving without a license. He'd never bothered to renew his license when it had expired on his birthday more than 4 months earlier. As he began speaking, Teddy was just short of utter panic. Even reading from the cue cards held by his cousin, Joe Gargan, he almost immediately misspoke.
Prior to my appearance in court, it would have been proper for me to comment on these matters.
Of course, he meant to say it would have been improper.
But tonight I am free to tell you what happened and to say what it means to me.
What it meant was that he would never follow in his brother's footsteps. He would never be president. The brief address had been cobbled together by President Jack Kennedy's most trusted speechwriter, Ted Sorensen. Sorensen had tried his best to embarrass neither the family nor himself by making Ted's apologia sound too preposterous. But the falsehoods would remain palpable, although Teddy began with the truth about how he happened to be on the island.
On the weekend of July 18th, I was on Martha's Vineyard Island, participating with my nephew, Joe Kennedy. As for 30 years, my family has participated in the annual Edgartown Sailing Regatta. Only reasons of health prevented my wife from accompanying me.
He had sailed poorly that afternoon, finishing ninth. Afterwards, he had a few drinks with his fellow yachtsmen, then returned to his hotel room in Edgartown for more beers. He had been late making reservations, so while he had a room on Edgartown, his female guests were staying in a rough cottage on the small nearby island of Chappaquiddick, accessible only by a ferry.
On Chappaquiddick Island, off Martha's Vineyard, I attended on Friday evening, July 18th, a cookout.
A cookout indeed. His Boston chauffeur had brought down a huge stock of liquor and beer. Including the older driver, there were four men in the party and five much younger women, all in their 20s. Who are these girls, as Teddy would describe them, at the cookout?
I had encouraged and helped sponsor for a devoted group of Kennedy campaign secretaries.
Collectively, they were known as the Boiler Room Girls. It was a lachrymose evening. They were all still grieving over Bobby Kennedy's murder a year earlier. After a few hours, they began to pair off.
When I left the party around 11:15 p.m., I was accompanied by one of these girls, Miss Mary Jo Kopechne. Mary Jo was one of the most devoted members of the staff of Senator Robert Kennedy. She worked for him for 4 years and was broken up over his death. For this reason, and because she was such a gentle, kind, and idealistic person, all of us tried to help her feel that she still had a home with the Kennedy family.
At 28, Mary Jo Kopechne was the oldest of the women. Everything about her screamed Kennedy girlfriend. When she had come to Washington after college, her first job was with Senator George Smathers of Florida, JFK's best friend in Congress, a member both of JFK's wedding party and his 1950s, before Castro's takeover of Cuba, Smathers and JFK used to travel together to Havana, where they enjoyed the island's finest prostitutes, compliments of American gangsters Meyer Lansky and Santo Traficante. Mary Jo's landlord in Washington was Bobby Baker, a bagman for Democrat senators, including the future president, Lyndon Johnson. Baker also ran an after-hours club where he provided high-class hookers, including a suspected East German spy, for President Kennedy. She would be deported shortly before JFK was murdered. As a pimp, Baker's other clients also included another future president, Congressman Gerry Ford. That was one reason why, after JFK's assassination, Ford was selected for the Warren Commission that was given the assignment of whitewashing the real facts of the conspiracy. LBJ and J. Edgar Hoover of the FBI had enough dirt to keep Ford in line. Now it was 1969, and Mary Jo Kopechne was dead. Adding to the scandal, when her body was recovered from the overturned Oldsmobile, the medical examiner discovered she was not wearing any underwear. Now, in front of a national audience, Teddy had to address the distasteful rumors.
There is no truth, no truth whatever, to the widely circulated suspicions of immoral conduct that have been leveled at my behavior and hers regarding that evening. There has never been a private relationship between us of any kind. I know of nothing in Mary Jo's conduct on that or any other occasion. And the same is true of the other girls at that party that would lend any substance to such ugly speculation about their character. Nor was I driving under the influence of liquor.
A purse belonging to the youngest of the women, Rosemary Cricket Keough, had been found in the submerged car. One competing theory was that perhaps Mary Jo had had too much to drink, but found the tiny cottage too noisy to sleep in, so had slipped away and passed out in the back of the car. According to this speculation, when the car went off the Dyke Bridge, Kennedy and Keough had swum to safety, not even knowing that Mary Jo was passed out in the back seat. FBI agents monitoring the case for Richard Nixon's White House later joked that version would have been a more believable one than the tale Teddy was spinning that Friday night a week later in Hyannisport.
The car that I was driving on an unlit road went off a narrow bridge, which had no guardrails and was built on a left angle to the road. The car overturned in a deep pond and immediately filled with water. I remember thinking as the cold water rushed in around my head that I was for certain drowning. Then water entered my lungs and I actually felt the sensation of drowning. But somehow I struggled to the surface alive. I made immediate and repeated efforts to save Mary Jo by diving into the strong and murky current, but succeeded only in increasing my state of utter exhaustion and alarm.
He had staggered by at least one lit house, a residence with a telephone that he could have used to seek aid. Instead, soaking wet, he kept trudging back to the party cottage.
My conduct and conversations during the next several hours, to the extent that I can remember them, make no sense to me at all. Although my doctors informed me that I suffered a cerebral concussion as well as shock, I do not seek to escape responsibility for my actions by placing the blame either on the physical and emotional trauma brought on by the accident or on anyone else.
Not true. His cousin, Joe Gargan, would later tell the author of Senatorial Privilege, the ultimate book about Chappaquiddick, that early that Saturday morning, Teddy spun out various other stories he might be able to put across. Perhaps that Mary Jo had been in the car by herself, or even that Gargan himself had been driving. Now, he would admit at least a few facts about his misconduct.
I regard as indefensible the fact that I did not report the accident to the police immediately. Instead of looking directly for a telephone after lying exhausted in the grass for an undetermined time, I walked back to the cottage where the party was being held and requested the help of two friends, my cousin Joseph Gargan and Paul Markham.
Paul Markham was another Kennedy family liege man, the former U.S. attorney in Boston. Both he and Markham would later join Alcoholics Anonymous. The three men went back to the bridge, where Gargan and Markham likewise dove into the swift currents, trying to no avail to free Mary Jo. In his televised remarks, Teddy himself was now diving into his own depths of self-pity.
All kinds of scrambled thoughts, all of them confused, some of them irrational, many of them which I cannot recall, and some of which I would not have seriously entertained under normal circumstances, went through my mind during this period. They were reflected in the various inexplicable, inconsistent, and inconclusive things I said and did, including such questions as whether the girl might still be alive somewhere out of that immediate area, whether some awful curse did actually hang over all the Kennedys.
Even Teddy seemed embarrassed by the bathos. Other than his cousin, who was holding the cue cards, he had banned all family and retainers from the book-lined room where he was delivering the speech. They were all watching on TV, like everyone else in the nation. Teddy had also vetoed a network feed of the broadcast, insisting instead that the arrangements be handled by Channel 5 in Boston. That station was battling to retain its license, unsuccessfully as it turned out. But in 1969, it was run by one of Joe Kennedy's old operatives, another loyal family retainer. And to introduce Ted, the Kennedys selected another of their old friends from Channel 5, anchor Jack Hines. His father was a former mayor of Boston. It was John B. Hines Sr. who had finally ended the political career of James Michael Curley. The rascal king had driven Teddy's beloved grandfather, Honey Fitz, from politics in the wake of his own sexual scandal more than half a century earlier. At this moment, more than anything, Teddy needed the solace of his friends as he now continued his maudlin thoughts, as penned by Sorensen. Could the accident have been but a dream? A nightmare? He speculated.
Whether there was some justifiable reason for me to doubt what had happened and to delay my report, whether somehow the awful weight of this incredible incident might in some way pass from my shoulders. I was overcome, I'm frank to say, by a jumble of emotions, grief, fear, doubt, exhaustion, panic, confusion, and shock.
After giving up their attempts to rescue Mary Jo, the three men drove to the ferry, but it was long past midnight. Teddy impulsively dove into the current and swam back to Edgartown, or so he said later. He returned to his room at the Shiretown Inn.
I remember going out at one point and saying something to the room clerk.
In fact, he was establishing an alibi. He needed a witness that he had returned to Edgartown. Being a Kennedy, Teddy had no cash, not even any change. So he borrowed a dime from the desk clerk and started making phone calls. The first was to one of his mistresses in Palm Beach. She had the phone number of Steve Smith, his brother-in-law, the family fixer. That was who Teddy desperately needed to speak to. Although, of course, he couldn't tell the truth in his prepared statement.
In the morning, with my mind somewhat more lucid, I made an effort to call a family legal advisor, Burke Marshall, from a public telephone on the Chappaquiddick side of the ferry, and then belatedly reported the accident to the Martha Vineyard police.
You're listening to the Howie Carr Radio Network.
This is Jeff in Woodstock, Connecticut.
This is Laura Benner in South Burlington, Vermont.
This is Jimmy Mack in Falmouth, Massachusetts, and this is The Howie Carr Show.
In the morning, with my mind somewhat more lucid, I made an effort to call a family legal advisor, Burke Marshall, from a public telephone on the Chappaquiddick side of the ferry, and then belatedly reported the accident to the Martha Vineyard police.
It was time now to wrap up the national part of the broadcast.
No words on my part can possibly express the terrible pain and suffering I feel over this tragic incident. This last week has been an agonizing one for me and for the members of my family, and the grief we feel over the loss of a wonderful friend will remain with us the rest of our lives. These events, the publicity, innuendo, and whispers which have surrounded them, and my admission of guilt this morning, raises the question in my mind of whether my standing among the people of my state has been so impaired that I should resign my seat in the United States Senate.
At this moment, Teddy paused and turned to the second camera, as though he were about to speak extemporaneously to his constituents. In reality, Gargan was still holding up cue cards, just a different set.
The people of this state, the state which sent John Quincy Adams, and Daniel Webster, and Charles Sumner, and Henry Cabot Lodge, and John Kennedy to the United States Senate, are entitled to representation in that body by men who inspire their utmost confidence. For this reason, I would understand full well why some might think it right for me to resign. For me, this will be a difficult decision to make. And so I ask you tonight, the people of Massachusetts, to think this through with me. In facing this decision, I seek your advice and opinion. In making it, I seek your prayers. For this is a decision that I will have finally to make on my own.
Now, in a true Kennedy-esque touch, Teddy began reading, without attribution, his own brother's words from Profiles in Courage, ghostwritten originally by Ted Sorensen, now re-ghostwritten for the youngest brother.
It has been written, a man does what he must, in spite of personal consequences, in spite of obstacles and dangers and pressures, and that is the basis of all human morality. Whatever may be the sacrifices he faces, if he follows his conscience, the loss of his friends, his fortune, his contentment, even the esteem of his fellow men, each man must decide for himself the course he will follow. The stories of the past courage cannot supply courage itself. For this, each man must look into his own soul. I pray that I can have the courage to make the right decision. Whatever is decided, whatever the future holds for me, I hope that I shall be able to put this most recent tragedy behind me and make some further contribution to our state and mankind, whether it be in public or private life.
And that's all the time we have for it. It's just a few minutes left. Search for Chappaquiddick Howie Carr on The Howie Carr Show. You can listen to the rest of the podcast. And don't forget to take advantage of the special running by any Kennedy Babylon book at HowieCarrShow.com. Before Sunday at midnight, it will be autographed by Howie himself. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.